And welcome in. This is WICE's Community Connection, and happy weekend to you. I'm Station Manager Phil Tower, and this week, part two of my conversation with Dr. Randall Jelks. Dr. Jelks, formerly of Calvin College, now Calvin University. He is a well-renowned author with several books, including African Americans in the Furniture City and Benjamin Elijah Mays, Schoolmaster of the Movement. Dr. Jelks has also recently written Faith and Struggle in the Lives of Four African Americans, Ethel Waters, Mary Lou Williams, Eldridge Cleaver, and Muhammad Ali. And his most recent book, which we are speaking to him about in this part two of our conversation, is Letters to Martin, Meditations on Democracy in Black America. Now my conversation, part two, with Dr. Randall Jelks on this week's WICE's Community Connection. Dr. Randall Maurice Jelks, our guest. The book is Letters to Martin. It was published in January of 2022. It's available wherever you get your books, especially here in West Michigan. We've got some
local bookstores.
Local bookstores. We want to give them a shout out. Yeah. And it is. Is it in paperback now?
Not yet. I think soon. But it's reasonably priced, and I have to say all the local bookstores, because I'm an advocate of local bookstores. They gave me opportunities to talk about the books, and so
absolutely. And we can shout out many of them here, including Schuller Books and Music. Had been a long time friend of WYCE. I want to ask you in terms of some of the things that are getting, unfortunately, infused in school politics and elsewhere, and, you know, criticism about this thing that I have yet to have anybody really define it to me, critical race theory, pejorative of using the word woke, and really, I think, in a hurtful and mean-spirited context, at least when I see it. But I don't know if people really understand what it means for someone to be labeled as woke. It's not necessarily a bad thing. And I think you wrote about that. And I just would like to have you talk about that.
Yeah. First of all, back to King. I mean, he used this term at a commencement address in 1959 at his alma mater, Morehouse College. And he used the analogy that we needed to be woke in the middle of a revolution. And, I can't think of it, my mind is slipping, but we needed to be aware that there are all kinds of social movements around the world, not simply the United States. And he was telling Morehouse students that things could change on them, that things. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted them to be aware of the great social movements around the world. I mean, from not just Ukraine, but elsewhere. And so that term woke came from Dr. King, that he wanted them to be well aware of the tides of history that are going on. It's not simply anti-democratic behavior is not simply in the United States. It's global. So we mm-hmm. see authoritarian regimes, other kinds of things. Young people using it wanted that to be a sign that we understand the structural deficits of the United States. And this brings us to critical race theory. The critical race theory, it came out of the law. So why did we have all these passages of these bills, but we still had the same kind of structural deficits going on, the kind of intersection of women or gender rights and other kinds of things? Why do those still go on? It's a theoretical formulation. People don't read philosophy anymore. And so it asks the question, what is it that structurally we have going on in the society? So cities have structural deficits. How do we resolve them? Once we relied on a tax base of big industry factories, now what do we do when we don't have those same kind of industries? So critical race theory is to help us think about those questions. One doesn't not have to agree with the way that is formulated, and you could argue other formulations such as at the University of Chicago, all things are economic. The University of Chicago School of Economics, all things are economics, and that's what should be protected over against other things. So theories and academics are to be debated, which is closer to the truth. Well, you'll have to decide that. But critical race theory is not some horrifying boogie person that's going to jump out and scare the bejesus out of you.
And it's not something that I guess is, for lack of a better term, is being forced upon in an educational context, at least locally. Anybody at the high school or middle school level, these things get often repeated and taken to be truth. And, you know, just back to the whole idea of structural things that have existed for years in society, financially, in terms of real estate, bank decisions,
right.
There is absolute, unequivocal proof that decisions were made based on skin color. And there is
or class.
Class, yes,
when I'm
exactly.
Driving here down 131, I mean, think about it. The people who got wiped out, working class people, whether they were black, white, Mexican, whoever. 131 took out. So the structural issue, it certainly didn't cut through, no offense to my friends who live in East Grand Rapids, but the highway would never cut through East Grand Rapids, right? I mean, it would mm-hmm. it cut through the Polish neighborhoods, it cut through the... So these are... And people didn't get paid a whole lot of money for their homes to move yeah. elsewhere. So
bottom line, Randall, they didn't have lobbyists.
That's right, right.
These
were the kind of structural issues that we talk about. Women did work that we didn't account for. Now that we have to take care of seniors, we realize all this free labor we got from women, right? Yeah. So those are the kinds of structural things that critical race theory talks about in terms of race, but also in terms of gender.
As we were speaking with Dr. Randall Maurice Jelks, most recently of University of Kansas, for some time, how many years were you at Calvin College?
I was at Calvin from 92 until I left in 2008.
Okay, so considerable amount of time.
Yes.
You are in the African American Studies Department at University of Kansas.
Yeah, I'm in actually two departments and have affiliation with two others. My appointment is a graduate program called American Studies at the University of Kansas.
Terrific.
And then I have an appointment in African and African American studies and history and religious studies. So I get to hide in a lot of different places.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. That means people want to hear from you.
Yeah.
And that's great. And I think, you know, as we talk about race and all these challenges we have in our world today, and thankfully we have them and we can talk about them. It all comes down to, I remember it with all the civil unrest after the George Floyd death and,
yeah.
the issues we had here in Grand Rapids. I'll never forget a moment where someone speaking to the police in downtown Grand Rapids spoke loudly. It was a live TV shot and said, "We just want to feel heard."
Mm. Yeah.
Well, that just pretty much sums the whole thing up.
Most people, I think, and of course, I think we do have systems to be heard that when they're not co-opted, that people ought to be allowed to organize themselves that's what King fought for, that what makes the United States different is that we have the right to protest. We have the right to organize when we feel we're not being heard. When we think we need a stop sign where a child has gotten hit, we have the right to organize. And this anti-woke behavior is to prevent people from organizing, particularly around school issues of shootings, particularly in Florida and other stuff. That seems to me quite dangerous. People
yeah.
have the right to come to City Hall collectively and give their piece. They don't have the right to utterly disrupt, but they have the right to give their piece and to lobby their whoever it is, their state reps, whoever it is.
I'm going to talk about West Michigan as we close our conversation. with Dr. Randall Jokes, talking about primarily his most recent book, highly recommended, Letters to Martin, Meditations on Democracy Here in Black America. I want to talk about Grand Rapids. I've had the pleasure of being here a long time. The city has become much more of a welcoming place, much more of an inclusive place. Obviously, it's improved in terms of quality of life and things to do, restaurants, arts, culture. But in terms of living here as a person of color, I at least get the sense anecdotally that things have improved. But we still have, as with everything, a ways to go. Fair enough to say?
I would say, yeah. I would think West Michigan advertises itself, particularly Grand Rapids, I can say, as a welcoming place. The problem is, again, back to these structures, we have structural deficits that the community leaders have been unwilling to pay attention to for a lengthy period of time. Back in 2000, I'll say this is a personal story. I went to all of the foundations around town and saying, let's look at the census data and let's talk about these things. And I couldn't get a bite on them. It was clear enough that in the county, for example, schooling, not simply Grand Rapids Public School, but the county, with the exception of two or three schools, high schools, we was very unimpressive statistics coming out. And so we needed to talk about those things. Very few community leaders. It's my criticism. And I like many of the people who run these organizations personally. But my criticism is that they did not have the courage to do what was necessary for the good of the entire community. What happens in Black America also happens elsewhere. And so I think there's a lot. The median income, if you look at Black families in Grand Rapids, is appallingly low. Mm-hmm. And that's not just because people are lazy. And that would be the stereotype that would be used. So we have to look at these issues of class and wages and income. And what forced these issues has been COVID, because people just said, well, I'm tired of working for cheap and we need more. Once McDonald's said they couldn't pay $15 an hour, suddenly they can pay $15 an hour. And, you know, people need childcare. I've been arguing this forever. Childcare is a big issue. If you got to go to work, who's going to care for your kids? Now it takes two incomes, as we all know. Or maybe three.
Indeed.
Right? So those are kinds of issues that we have to look at. Again, back to that structural question and think about those issues.
Not only that, housing. We could spend another 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's correct.
On housing.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I'm glad you said daycare, because that is a huge underlying issue that's so often overlooked.
Right. And so your kid's sick, that I got to take off. You know, I mean, we've all experienced this as parents.
Yes, indeed. We could go on and on, and we will do that another time when we can get the good friend of mine and just great man, Dr. Randall Jelks, back here in our studios.
Well, thank you for those kind words, and thank you for taking the time to interview me, Phil.
Highly recommend Letters to Martin, Meditations on Democracy in Black America. It's available at your favorite local bookstore. And Dr. Jelks has been with us on this edition of Community Connection on WYCE. Thank you so much for listening.